the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, let's see. A, the TPP, well, the TPP is still an open question. Actually, it's all an open question. It's still an open question because it was just one vote in the Senate, and it was just a vote to invoke cloture to end a debate, as it were. In other words, to set it up for an actual vote on the law. This being Fast Track yesterday, but Fast Track was defeated by 44, as I recall, Democrats saying no, maybe 45. Okay, 45 Democrats. And just to put that out there, I see that as a victory. It's a great first step. But I guarantee you, now the pressure begins. So, meanwhile, we had this horrific train accident in the Philadelphia area. This is the train that runs from Washington, D.C. to New York City. And it appears, I mean, you know, nobody is officially saying this, but if you listen to the accounts of the passengers that are being made public, it appears that the train hit a curve going too fast. And the same thing had happened back in, I think it was 74. There was a very lethal, very deadly train crash in the same place, and apparently for roughly the same reason. But it raises a really important question. I mean, back before Reaganism took over America, we actually in this country believed in the United States. Abraham Lincoln helped build the railroad system across this country. We believed in the United States. Abraham Lincoln built the land grant college system, 56, I think it is, over 50 colleges where students could go to school for free, were established by Abe Lincoln. Franklin Roosevelt built infrastructure all over the country, you know, most of it having to do with electricity and power and telephones and things. JFK said in 1961, well, here's what JFK said in 1961. Oh, this is the moonshot. This is, he said, we're going to go to the moon. You know, we can do big things here. Here he is.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Wow. Wow. I mean, this is when we believed in America, right? I mean, John Kennedy talked about this frequently. In fact, he talked about Abe Lincoln putting together the land-grant colleges. Here he is.
And those who say that what we are now talking about spoils our great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West. And in 1862, he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizenry and a progressive government is what has made this country great. And we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
We, I think, being the royal we, in other words, JFK, well, no, the country, too. I mean, it was progressive citizenry. Lincoln was a progressive. He would not be welcome in today's Republican Party, I'm quite sure, although they love to invoke him. And Kennedy, we believed in America. And then along came Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan had this to say about our government, our nation, this government that was created by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and all those guys, all those, you know, dead white guys. But it was a government that was created by them in the Declaration of Independence. The governments are instituted among men to provide for their safety and their happiness. It's very straightforward. The government is what we, the United States is. We built it. We created it. We bled and died for it. But this is what Reagan had to say about that.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Government is evil, right? Government is the problem. And so starting in the 1980s, we basically just, you know, started defunding or cutting funding or stopped the growth of funding to the programs, the kind of infrastructure that would make America great. You have, I remember Bernie Sanders maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago or so was talking about how he was in Vermont, in a town in Vermont, talking to the mayor, and they were digging up the street out in front of somebody's house or something, or maybe it was in front of City Hall, because Bernie was there. And the mayor pointed down to the water lines underground, and he says words to the effect of, it's been a while since I heard the story, so this is from my memory. But he said words to the effect of, that water pipe, you know how old that water pipe is? And Bernie said, I don't know how old. And the guy says, well, it was laid there by returning soldiers from the Civil War. It literally dated back to like the 1860s or 1870s. That's our infrastructure. Japan just announced, I mean, this was last month, but just announced, that they have a new maglev train. They tested it last week. Now, maglev means it's actually levitated off the tracks, right? Instead of taking all that energy and making wheels spin, they take the energy and they lift the train off the tracks, so there's no resistance from the rails, and then the thing just flies along the track, right? It's levitating, literally, on magnetism. Japan tested a maglev train with a top speed of 374 miles an hour. China, right now. China, which was just 3 decades ago, was a third world country with basically, you know, no high-speed infrastructure whatsoever. China has the world's fastest commercial maglev train, travels at 268 miles an hour. I mean, we have our priorities all screwed up. We spent $1 trillion on Star Wars that everybody at the time said wouldn't work, and to this day still doesn't work. You know, Ronnie Reagan's project. Oh, it's fine to throw money at defense, but don't throw money at infrastructure, because that should be the province of the billionaires. You see where Donald Trump is tweeting out, hey, I could have built this thing for less than the government. Just turn it over to me. Right. Britain tried that. They privatized their trains. I don't know how much it's still private versus how much it's still public, but I remember at the time being in the UK that the year after they had privatized their trains, and boy, were they having a mess on some of their routes. Because the private for-profit corporations, you know, they're trying to maximize profit. How do you maximize profit? Well, ignoring maintenance is a good start. Why are we willing to tolerate third world infrastructure in the United States? There are trains in India, I'm guessing, that travel faster than ours. Maybe not yet, but there will be soon. I mean, they are developing. Infrastructure is the soil in which business roots itself. You can't have a thriving economy without good infrastructure. So, I mean, yeah, this may be conductor error, it may not, we don't know yet, but that still doesn't set aside the fact that we could have had a good train.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
One that, I mean, the European trains, the Japanese trains, the Chinese trains, they're all just so computerized, they're like our airplanes now, basically. You know, almost don't need an engineer. And welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. And I forgot to open my call screen software, so I'm doing it right now, and I'm waiting for it to come up, and it can be slow. Yes? Okay. Here we go. But anyway, I see this as a wake-up call, even if it is, you know, conductor error. it's still a wake-up call to all of us that, you know, we need to be paying attention to the state of our infrastructure. Barb in thank you, South Carolina. Hey, Barb.
You are welcome.
Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Thank you. You said the head of the FEC, Federal Election Committee, said that they are stymied because they can't do their job because of all the infighting. Can't Congress make them do their job? Can't they fire them all?
No. There are three Republicans and three Democrats who run the Federal Election Commission. And it takes four votes to do anything. And these members are appointed for terms that run several years. I don't know the length of the term. But the three Republicans who are on that committee are refusing to do absolutely pretty much anything. I mean, they tried to have a meeting last week. The New York Times reported on this. Maybe it was the week before. Just a breakfast meeting. And the Republicans refused to agree with the Democrats on what to eat for breakfast by way of sabotaging the breakfast meeting. And
this, oh, my goodness. That's ridiculous. It's like everything in the country. The Republicans aren't doing anything. They refuse to get along, and we suffer.
I know. They want to bring this country to its knees so that it will be blamed on Barack Obama and the Democrats. And to some extent, they've had quite a bit of success, frankly, in doing that. And, I'd say the successes that Obama has had have been rigorously in defiance of the Republicans or whatever. But there haven't, you know, clearly there haven't been enough of those, victories, as it were,
yeah,
on his part.
Exactly. Well, and now they want Jeb to be president, and he agrees with his brother. When is the next war starting?
I know. Well, maybe in a year and a half. Who knows? It's really fun. Fun is the wrong word. It's really kind of sad, actually, to watch Jeb go through this. Oh yeah, knowing what I knew then, I would bomb Iran. Oh no, I didn't hear Megyn Kelly ask the question right. Would you bomb Iran or not? Or Iraq, excuse me. Would you? Sean Hannity says, and Jeb goes, well, I don't know. It's come on, you've had what? How many years has it been? We started bombing Iraq in 2003. He's had 12 years to rehearse his answer.
Oh, absolutely. It's disgusting. Just disgusting. Oh, there's got to be. We've got to get more people to vote. But if our voting is corrupt, what are we going to do?
Well, we get as many people to the polls as we can, no matter what. Even if the voting systems are corrupt, you know, the saying that we put out in 2008 and 2012 was, you know, if they're going to steal 2, 3, 4 million votes, if they're going to block a couple of million people from voting. And by the way, the Hillary Clinton campaign is now suing the state of Wisconsin, I believe it is. He's in Wisconsin or North Carolina. They just launched a lawsuit yesterday to stop all the voter suppression. No, it's Ohio. They're suing Ohio to block the voter suppression efforts that the John Kasich and the Republicans in Ohio have put into place. Barb, but basically, if they're going to steal 4 million votes, we need to have 6 million people show up. That's the bottom line. Barb, thank you. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. This is hopefully a wake-up call. On the other hand, we have Republican Bill Schuster, who's on who's the chairman of the Transportation Commission in a committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, Republican. Bill Schuster talking about Amtrak. Here's what he had to say.
So in the future, they can move towards going away from the subsidy that the federal government. That's my goal, to get an Amtrak that doesn't have any federal subsidies.
Yeah, let's just cut all that money out of Amtrak. We don't need no stinking infrastructure in this country. People can walk. You know, it's healthy for them. Why don't we just become like rural India? You know, maybe some carts, maybe some ox to draw the plows in the fields, rickshaws. You know, women can carry those giant bales of stuff on their shoulders and on their heads like they do in third world countries. Sometimes men do, but typically not. I mean, this is this troglodyte. I was going to say 19th century thinking on the part of the Republicans, but during the 19th century, we built a hell of a lot of infrastructure in the United States. We built the Erie Canal. so that you could get things all the way from Chicago to New York City, or anywhere on the East Coast for that matter. We built the railroads. We built the telegraph lines all across this country. Now, so some of this was done with private money. Some of it was done with public money. The Erie Canal Corporation was a nonprofit corporation, but it was funded mostly by the governments in the states that were involved. It is embarrassing. It's tragic that in the United States, our high-speed train averages 68 miles an hour. And in Japan and China, it's 238 miles an hour. In Japan, it's running over 300 miles an hour. It's not just embarrassing and tragic. It's bad for business. Republicans claim to be all about business. They're really not all about business. They're all about billionaires. You want proof that infrastructure is what causes business to grow? Look at the parts of this country where there is very high quality, very modern infrastructure. Look at Silicon Valley. Look at San Francisco. Look at Seattle. Look at Portland. And then you look at the places where the infrastructure is old and decaying and decrepit. Look at downtown Baltimore. Look at Detroit. At least down, you know, the city of Detroit, downtown Detroit. Now you could say, okay, well, yeah, they're not putting any infrastructure in there because all the factories closed, because all the jobs went overseas because of our insane trade policies as a consequence of Reaganism. And you would be right to a certain extent, but hey, if you want the business to return to those areas, how about building out some infrastructure? Back when it was factories, the main infrastructure that was needed was electricity and telephone lines. I'm sorry, infrastructure today needs to go a whole lot farther than that. Why don't we rebuild the Northeast Corridor? I mean, this is crazy. This is crazy. This should be a huge wake-up call, regardless of the cause of this accident, this tragic accident. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl, thanks for calling in. What's up?
You know, Tom, as I sit outside my office and I'm watching these two huge trucks, I'm pretty sure you can hear, go by, and I sit in my office sitting next to a train track. Literally, there's a train track, good 50 yards from my office.
Whoa.
And those train tracks was probably put there before my grandfather was born.
Yep.
And he's 87.
Yep.
It's utterly ridiculous. And one of the biggest reasons why this is allowed to happen to our country is because the ignorance of our population in our country.
Well, they got sold a bill of goods, Carl. I mean, Reaganism, the basic tenet of Reaganism is that government can do nothing right, corporations can do everything, so we should, quote, starve the beast. That was the phrase David Stockman came up with in the Reagan administration. Kill off government to the point where it's failing badly, and then say, hey, let's bring in Donald Trump. He knows how to build things.
Exactly. And people, what I mean by ignorant, I don't mean that as a mean way. It's just a lot of Americans are just unaware of what goes on outside of our country.
Yeah.
They don't go places to see different airports or see their roads or see their train system. You know, we've been sold a bill of goods, like you said, not only by Ronald Reagan and his ilk, but by this America's number one in everything, when in fact we're not, and it's embarrassing. We are too big, too rich of a country, too diverse of a country for our infrastructure to be just crumbling around us. My God, we got pipes, like you said, underneath our cities that's, you know, 100 years plus. We had a flood here in Nashville about 3 years ago. And here's the thing, Tom. I've been living here. I've been coming to Nashville my whole life. I'm originally from Chicago, but I've been coming here my whole life. I've seen it rain harder than that 1,000 different times. But it was infrastructure failure to drain the water out that made that massive flood that it got to the point where we had.
The storm drains couldn't handle it.
Storm drains couldn't handle it.
Yeah, amazing. Carl, thanks for the call. I'm with you. Thank you very much. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Back with more about Amtrak, infrastructure, the state of America, and how Reaganism is destroying America right after this. Out of the very, very patripotestally ugly, the good. Starbucks, the coffee giant, announced on Friday that its humanitarian bottle water brand, Ethos, would be moving their operations over the next 6 months out of drought-stricken California and into Pennsylvania. Starbucks acquired the global brand Ethos to help combat water shortages across the world. But in the midst of California's historic drought, the companies faced growing criticism that the counties where the water is drawn and bottled have been in emergency drought conditions for over a year. While Pennsylvania faces its own water issues due to the fracking boom over the last few years, this is still an important move that shows that even multinational corporations can't ignore today's climate change-caused environmental crises. The bad. Andrea Tenteros, the host of the official voice of the Confederate States of America, Fox so-called News, believes that white Christian men have it hardest in America. On a recent edition of Outnumbered, Andrea lamented the plight of white Christian men in America and wondered, where are the organizations in defense of white men? Check it out.
Harris, the last acceptable form of discrimination in this country now is two groups, one, Christians, and two, white men. And that's why she can get away with this. Why? Where are the organizations in defense of white men? Where are the marches? Where are the editorials penned? I mean, she was sort of hinting around, too, that the problem on campuses is white male masculinity. It is the last acceptable form of discrimination in this country is against white men. And that's why they're feminizing them even more to get rid of that masculinity. Well,
right. Where are the institutions that support white men? How about just about every aspect of American life and business? Only rarely are they not controlled by and thus run for the benefit of white men. This pandering to Fox's white Confederate base, telling them that they're victims, has reached a point where it's become a parody of itself. And the very, very ugly, Ann Coulter, the conservative commentator, offered her black perspective. Really, on the matter of racism in America. Unfortunately, her perspective is so wrong and so racist that even Sean Hannity felt compelled to correct her. Seriously, check it out.
I liked your first four guests on it, but now we're going to get the black perspective on this.
Is that yours?
Yeah, that's right.
With the blonde hair. Okay.
I mean, yes, America does owe black America for slavery, for the democratic policies of Jim Crow. I think we're making it up now. When, you know, you're getting admitted to Princeton when you can't read, is that enough yet?
Well,
that isn't
that, in other words, there are different standards, but you have to read to get into Princeton.
That isn't...
I get your point.
Yeah, when you're making a statement so ridiculous that Sean Hannity has to correct you, you know that what you've said is very, very ugly. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Anyhow, back to your calls here. Steve in Long Island, New York. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. This shows how the right wing are such hypocrites. They like to tout us as the country to follow, that we're American exceptionalism, and all this other BS that they like to spew. But the truth is that our third world infrastructure is getting worse every day. And they refuse to do anything about it. I'm a proud, my grandfather was a member of the CCCs. I have everything from that man. And I'm going to tell you, I look back at some of the stuff that generation had and how they felt about this country, and they loved it unconditionally. They loved this country.
Right.
But like you said, since Reagan, as some people call him, the Antichrist, They have actually taken this country and taken it down a path to third world status for the majority of the people, not for the ultra rich.
Right.
And believe me, Tom, I see them every day. I work with billionaires and millionaires every day, and they say the same things you and I are saying, the ones that I talk to, and they can't get over the fact that the party is leading them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, Steve. I'm with you. Thank you for the call. Get that Reagan clip ready again, because I just want to make this point one more time. In fact, the John Kennedy clip first. This is how America used to view itself. Jim, let's go to the JFK and Lincoln, the land-grant college thing, where Kennedy is pushing back. This is when John Kennedy actually was proposing a national health care system. This is from the speech he gave proposing a national health care system, and he was talking about how the one in England is state-run, and we don't want to do that, but we want to do something that is better than nothing at all, which is basically what we had in 1961. You could get ripped off by insurance companies. Medical costs were just starting to significantly rise. And he proposed that, and then he said, words to the effect of, that there's this kind of libertarianish notion out there that we're all, well, Margaret Thatcher said, long after Kennedy was dead, but Margaret Thatcher said, there's no such thing as society. There's only a collection of individuals. This is Ayn Randism. It's also a form of sociopathy, but that's another rant. But here's here's Kennedy saying, no, we are not a nation of individuals. We are a community as a country. Here he is.
And those who say that what we are now talking about spoils our great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West, and in 1862 he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizenry and a progressive government is what has made this country great, and we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
And he said, we're going to send a man to the moon and bring him back in within a decade. It was unimaginable at the time. There was no technology even to do it. And not only did we do it, but out of that, we got all kinds of technology that basically led to the whole, to the computer revolution, to the, they invented everything from Velcro to it, promoted the ultimately the motion from transistors to integrated circuits and everything. I mean, a lot of this stuff came out. In fact, much of this stuff came out of government research for NASA. And then comes Ronald Reagan. Then America changed in the 1980s. Up until the 1980s, we believed in this country. We knew that our founders had fought and died to create a government, and our government represented us, we the people. And we believed in that. And we built a great country. We built enormous amounts of infrastructure all across this country, built a great country. And then Reagan came along and said, nah, government is the problem. Turn it over to the billionaires. Let them do it. You've got Donald Trump right now tweeting about how he can build Amtrak better than the government can. Right. For his own profit. Is that what we want? Why is it that pretty much no other country in the world does that? And when England tried it, it screwed up. And other countries that have tried it, they're a wreck. Well, anyhow, here's Reagan.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
No, not so much. Government is us. We the people. That's the first three words of the Constitution. Our constitutional government defines our government as us. Now, I would argue that the Supreme Court has done a lot of damage to that notion by allowing billionaires to buy politicians in the 1976 Buckley versus Vallejo case, and then expanding that dramatically with Citizens United and McCutcheon. But, nonetheless, it's like government is us. And if we're going to have a 21st century country, why is it we're like 28th in the world in infant mortality? You've got parts of Baltimore that have worse infant mortality rates than some of the poorest countries in Africa. It's all over. You go through the entire spectrum of metrics by which you measure how great a country is. And America, before Reaganism, was right at the top of all of those things. We were the most socially mobile country. In the United States in 1980, if you were born poor, you were more likely to end up wealthy or at least in the middle class than in any other country in the world. Today, when you look at the OECD countries, the fully developed countries, the 34 OECD countries, which goes from, England and the United States at the top to Costa Rica at the bottom, you look at those countries, and we are dead last. If you're born into poverty in the United States today, you are most likely to die in poverty. And if you are born rich, you are most likely going to die rich. And your parents are the biggest determinant of your success. And it's nothing magical or weird, and it's not about, oh, well, you know, they can afford for a better education. Well, maybe there's some piece to that, actually, because we've been destroying our public education system for 35 years, too. Reagan put Bill Bennett in charge of the Department of Education. Bill Bennett had campaigned on a platform of destroying the Department of Education. And the Department of Education is the difference in poor communities between having schools that function at all and having basically no schools. Or having schools that are just, you know, going to perpetuate poverty. But we are now at the bottom of the pile on this stuff. And now Amtrak, right? You know, our rail systems, they were the rails by and large were privatized. And look at what has happened. China has a 300 mile an hour train. Japan has a 300 mile an hour train. China has 238 mile an hour trains. They just built a train, the equivalent of from Chicago to New York, a high speed train in China. They did it in 5 years. We can't even, you know, we actually appropriated money for this. This was part of the stimulus to put high speed rail between Milwaukee and Madison, put high speed rail between Orlando and I think it was Miami. I could be wrong, but two cities, maybe it was Tampa, a couple of cities in Florida. The Republican governors said, no, we don't want the money. We don't want the jobs. We don't want the infrastructure. We don't care about the business that it'll bring.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Why? In my opinion, because they don't believe in America. They believe in billionaires. And we are not. We should not be a plutocracy. We should be a democracy, a republic. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Paula in Clarkson, Washington. Hey, Paula, what's up?
Well, Tom, nice to talk to you. I'm calling just because I'm furious. This country is $18 trillion in debt, and we spend more money on war than anything in this country. I don't know how anybody expects anything to get better.
Well, if you look back at 1952, Paula, we were just a couple of years out of World War II. Our debt to GDP ratio was 128% to one, right? 128%. Our GDP, our debt was 128% of GDP. It was higher as a proportion of GDP than it is now. And simple question: do you know how we paid off that debt? How we got out of debt after World War II?
I do. I think Roosevelt taxed the rich 97% over $25,000, but I mean,
the main way, Paula, was Dwight Eisenhower, the Republican president, built the interstate highway system, and that so stimulated our economy. That's what infrastructure does. You put $1 trillion into infrastructure, you end up with $5 trillion worth of tax revenue over the next 30 years as a consequence of the increased business activity. You know, it helped.
I agree with that.
And that's why I'm saying we need to build out our infrastructure. It will. You want to pay down the national debt? Modernize America.
Exactly, Tom. But with so much corruption and fraud riddled throughout our entire government, it is
nothing compared to the corruption and fraud, Paula, in the private sector. The private sector in this country. I mean, look at what the banksters have done to us and continue to do to us. You know, look at the manufacturing companies. I mean, our government has been corrupted. It's been corrupted by and large by money. And it was the Supreme Court that said that's just fine.
Right. Well, you know, and that leads me to the FEC. Who in their right mind would put six people on a panel without a tie-breaking vote?
Well, the Federal Election Commission was created 40 years ago. It was created more or less in the wake of the Nixon scandals. And it has worked just fine up until this last year. And in this last year, as the Koch brothers and other billionaires came in and said, we're gonna raise hundreds of millions of dollars to put Republicans into every office all across the country, the three Republicans on the FEC said, okay, that's it. We're not going to enforce any laws. If any laws get broken, we're going to do nothing about it. And, you know, which is nuts.
I'm concerned because Bernie needs to have the election system operating you know, fairly and functioning correctly if we're going to get somebody in there that can change some of this stuff for us, like infrastructure. But, you know, the 99% are suffering some injustice, whether it's wages, infrastructure, education, the environment. I mean, we are at a race to the bottom, and we've got to start doing something so that we can maybe get Bernie in there. He's the only one that's going to change anything for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with that one. Just 5 seconds. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Paula, very much for the call. It's really important for us to remember that infrastructure is the soil in which business is rooted. That good infrastructure, companies want to move to places where there are good schools. Their employees want to come along because they want their kids to go to good schools. Companies want to move to places where, infrastructure, for example, we've got to move our studios, right? These studios, this building's going to be torn down this fall. We're looking at places. One of our first questions, do you have high-speed broadband? How good is it? That's infrastructure. We'll be right back. Hey, Geeky Science, it's Wednesday. Let's get geeky on hormones. New research from Indiana University shows that artificial hormones used for raising livestock are lingering in the environment far longer than scientists previously thought. The research looks specifically at what's called trenbolone acetate, also known as TBA. It's a man-made version of testosterone. The structure of TBA is close enough to testosterone that a body will process it as though it were testosterone, although the effects are way more extreme. Livestock farmers across the U.S. have been using TBA as a substitute for traditional testosterone so that their cows gain weight faster. It's only one of five man-made hormones that are used by livestock farmers across the U.S. to beef up their cattle. TBA is implanted in a cow's ear. The cow then converts that TBA into a related chemical. It's passed through the cow and into our streams and rivers and our watersheds. When scientists first researched TBA and its byproducts, they thought that the hormone didn't have much risk environmentally because the metabolite breaks down in the sunlight. But they were wrong. They assumed that the byproduct would simply break down in the sunlight and there'd be no accumulation in the environment. What they missed is that the chemical breaks down in the sunlight, but it quickly recombines in the dark. That means that for years, these synthetic male hormones have been presumed safe as they've been entering our waterways without any regulation or oversight. Surface waterways, by the way, that two-thirds of Americans drink from, rely on for their drinking water. More importantly, we don't know what impacts TBA and its byproducts have as it enters the waterways and accumulates in animals upwards through the food chain. This is an important study. And these types of studies need to be completed before new chemicals are introduced into our environment. This really makes clear why the precautionary principle, rather than the profit principle, should be applied to anything that has the potential to harm human life. I mean, it's just very, very, very straightforward. Anyway, Cindy in Euclid, Ohio. Hey, Cindy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey. I wonder, you recall the jobs bill a ways back about 3 years ago where they included a great deal of infrastructure repair, and the Republicans defeated that.
It did, including the Northeast Corridor, if my recollection is correct. Nancy Pelosi got that passed through the House of Representatives. It had more than 50 votes in the Senate, so according to the Constitution, it should have become law. But the Republicans, you're right, filibustered it. We don't need no stinking infrastructure in this country. Government is evil.
Do you remember when King George I said that he wanted to see the roads privatized?
Right.
My girlfriend was going out with a lobbyist, unfortunately, who was with that fast pass system where
you
can just go through and it automatically reads your car. And apparently that's what they'd like to see. So it makes sense in their evil way that they would want to see all the roads crumble and the bridges crumble because then they can come in and privatize them, bill everyone on every road they drive.
Right.
And somebody's making a heap of money.
Right. The debate that I'm sorry, Cindy. You were going to say?
I said that's probably basically the reason why they're defeating these.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes beyond that. And Cindy, thank you for the call. There's a conversation that we need to have in this country that we haven't had since the time of Eisenhower. And that is, what is the appropriate role of government? Where do the commons end and the private spaces begin? Back to the George Washington administration, the consensus in the United States has been that the appropriate role of government is the commons. Government is created to protect the commons. The commons being basically two things. Those things that we all collectively use, parks, bridges, roads, the military, police departments, fire departments. These are our schools. These are part of our commons. And in every other developed country in the world, the hospitals and medical system is part of the commons. And then what is private? You know, I don't want the government making my clothes. I don't want the government making my car. So where does, for example, Amtrak come into this? Well, I would argue, the other point about commons is that the other commons are things that are what are called natural monopolies. You can only have one electric line coming into your house. It's a monopoly. You can only have one phone line coming into your house. It's a monopoly. You can only have one cable line coming into your house. It's a monopoly. So what other countries have done is they have said, let multiple, you know, either make these public utilities. Half of the electricity in the United States is generated by utilities that are actually owned by the communities that are using the electricity. And they tend to be less expensive than for-profit utilities and more responsive to their customers' needs. You have for-profit utilities in Hawaii right now that are fighting. Hawaii has the most, you know, 14% of the Hawaiian Islands. People are using solar power now. It's the most solar power in the country. And their for-profit utilities are hitting them with fines and trying to stop them and even trying to pass legislation blocking this. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers' little thing that, you know, where they get Republican legislators and lobbyists together in the same room twice a year. The lobbyists write legislation. The Republican state legislators take it back to their states. They've got model legislation, if my memory serves me right, that says that makes it more difficult to solarize your house, essentially, or even bans it in some places. I mean, what are the commons? Countries historically have dealt with those kind of commons, these natural monopolies, in one of two ways. Either demand that they be competitive. In most countries, for example, or in most developed countries, like the reason why in France you can get high-speed internet plus cable TV plus cell phone for $34 a month, and the high-speed internet is 10 times faster than ours, $34 a month for all three. The reason why is because even though every house has a single cable coming into it, any company can pump their single signal over that cable. Even though there are private companies that own most of them, those private companies have to let other people, you know, basically provide their services through their wires. They lease them. They make a profit on it. They just don't make an obscene profit on it. But here in the United States, these companies want to make an obscene profit. So one way to deal with the natural monopolies part of the commons is to enforce competition, government sets the rules for, essentially it's like a football game. Commerce is a game, you know, what are the rules of the game? Or the second way is the government simply does it, as in South Korea, for example, which has the highest speed broadband in the world. Now, you know, I'm frankly more fond of the first than the second. With things like that, I'd rather see competition using the private sector that is created by government regulation. When these monopolists, when these billionaires talk about the evils of government regulation, what they're really saying is they want to hold on to their monopolies. They don't want to be forced to compete with the little guy. In fact, they don't want any little guys. Before Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, all across America, there was little guys. Every mall, every downtown, family-owned businesses. They are all gone because of Reaganism.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio for the next hour, we're going to have an interesting conversation here. And I invite you to participate in it, by the way, with Sheriff Richard Mack. Sheriff Mack, I've lost my one sheet. Oh, here it is right here. Sheriff Mack is the founder of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. He's on the board of directors of the Oath Keepers Movement, oathkeepers.org. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association is CSPOA.org is that website. And, you know, we talked briefly, and welcome.
No, well, thanks. It's good to be back.
Welcome. Yeah, thank you very much, Sheriff. Last time you were on, it was by telephone, and we just had a short segment. We were talking about your worldview versus mine. You know, why do you call yourself a conservative? Why do I call myself a liberal? And
you know, I've kind of changed or added to conservative.
Okay.
Constitutional libertarian conservative.
Okay.
And probably more libertarian than anything else. But I just believe if the law is the law, we should follow it and live it and understand it. Most people in this country have never read the Constitution, and most of our politicians and police have never read the Constitution. And I find that alarming and destructive.
And I know that there are areas that have to do with the Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment where you and I are largely in agreement, you know, that we shouldn't be being spied on by our government, that we should have a more aggressive right to free speech, that, you know, some of those things.
You mean you don't agree with Barack Obama's administration setting up free speech zones and corrals for the Occupy people who were protesting, and for the at the Bundy Ranch protesters? They were literally arrested if they didn't have free speech inside the corral, a makeshift corral.
Well, that's
arrested
and
hauled off.
That's a process that, as I recall, started during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, and then Clinton did it.
Yeah, and see, and that's the difference between you and me. I assail both parties.
Yeah. Well, I just did.
Yeah.
I just did.
Rarely do I hear you be equally assailing towards Democrats.
Here's why. If you know, Democrats brought us Social Security. I mean, you may disagree with all these things, but Democrats brought us Social Security. They brought us Medicare. They brought us the 40-hour work week. They brought us workplace protections. They brought us clean air, clean food, predictable drugs. You know, all
Republicans
all
brought us
things.
The abolition of slavery.
Not the modern Republican Party.
I'm not talking about the modern one. I'm talking about historical significance of ending slavery.
It was progressives who brought
Democrats
you the end of slavery.
Fought it. All the way.
You're right. It was because the Democrats back then were conservatives.
And the Democrats were still fighting it in the 60s. And yet they get credit, almost credit for it. LBJ.
You're absolutely right. But let's take out the words Republican and Democrat, because those parties have gone back and forth and back and forth. Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive Republican. Abraham Lincoln was a progressive Republican. There are no more progressive Republicans left. Progressives brought us all these things. Can you name anything, at least in our lifetimes, that was brought to us that primarily benefits working people, poor people, the middle class in the United States, that primarily benefits them rather than billionaires, that was proposed by conservatives? I can think of nothing. I can give you a long list of things.
On the other hand, though, LBJ's war on poverty has been a complete failure. $10 trillion later,
it cut poverty in half in 6 years.
We have more poverty now than we did back then.
Because Bill Clinton repealed it.
Oh, a Democrat.
Yeah.
Oh, And LBJ was the biggest racist in the world, and he even said that the war on poverty will keep the blacks down, will keep them shut up, will keep them controlled.
Actually, that rather famous quote that I've seen on lots and lots of right-wing sites, if you go to Snopes, it's been debunked.
Well,
it was
if
made
you
up
look
by
at the movie Selma, it was done by Oprah Winfrey, LBJ was a racist.
Well, I'm not gonna defend LBJ on race, but you know, Selma, I'm not sure was totally accurate in its portrayal of LBJ. But my point is, I support the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party is about the 99% average working people in the United States. The Republican Party is exclusively about the billionaires, and they try to indoctrinate their followers into thinking as if they were billionaires by saying, "Oh, well, you know, we don't need the government."
But
for example,
protecting
us.
But the propaganda scheme is both sides. I mean, and the thing that you've been assailing is the money game, and both major parties are equally guilty of that, and they're both crooks. And they both take money from corporations. In fact, Democrats brag about all the money they get from corporations for their campaigns. And they even know that those same corporations donate to their opponent.
So then
we talked about this on your show before.
Join me in calling for a constitutional amendment to allow our government to regulate money in politics. We used to say, up until 1976, we said that spending money to buy politicians or buy public opinion was a behavior. And the Supreme Court said
Hillary
that it's
Clinton has assailed that, and she takes it more than anybody. No one is more crooked on that than this woman.
Well,
were broke when they left the White House. Yeah, right.
They were $14 million in debt.
The lies that we accept from both sides,
they were
actually
$14 million in debt when they left the White House, Richard. No. I mean, they actually were. They've done very well since then.
Yeah,
and I got a problem with, some problems with that, too. But let's talk about original principles.
Well, you said we agree on First and Fourth Amendments. Well, I support all of the Bill of Rights as intended and written by the founders. And for us to ignore the Second Amendment and for us to ignore a government that is in charge of protecting life, liberty, and property, and that we allow them to destroy it at such an alarming rate, and that you were talking about the cattle industry earlier, the Bundy situation, I got assailed.
He was a freeloader.
Yeah, no.
He was a thief.
Another lie. Both lies.
The guy was on public lands, okay, and he was not paying his grazing fees.
But
how is that not theft?
The 52.
He's stealing 52, from you and me. We're taxpayers.
Absolutely lie. Absolutely a lie. Now, let me tell you, I'm not calling you a liar. Don't get me wrong, okay? But this propaganda is out there.
Yeah.
And so let's look at the totality of that situation. I got assailed more than anybody there that was ready to kill unarmed Americans who were protesting legally.
You're talking about the guys up on the bridge who were pointing their guns down at the police?
No, you don't know where they were pointing. You just saw pictures that they had guns, okay? But those weren't the people that went on the protest that Saturday morning on April 12th. There was a lot of men and women who went up there to get the cows out, right, and a deputy from Clark County stopped the shooting. He went out, the only deputy actually doing something, Deputy Tom Roberts, went out and stopped the shooting. There's federal agents and federal mercenaries hired by the federal government, the Obama administration, such a magnanimous and wonderful man, trying to take care of people, actually has armed snipers there ready to kill unarmed protesters.
They're
who were doing nothing wrong. Not talking about the Bundys. Just the protesters, okay?
Right.
That are going to get the cattle, these trespassing cattle, these horrible cattle. The situation where you're talking about is 52 other ranchers were already put out of business, doing the same thing as Bundy, having their ranches on supposedly public land,
right,
90% of which of Nevada is owned by the federal government. And if that doesn't bother even you progressives, then something's wrong, which shows maybe that there is a disease going on with that. I hate to agree with Ann Coulter on anything, but this is the thing. The federal government shut down the cattle.
You're disagreeing with Teddy Roosevelt, you realize.
The federal government shut down all the ranchers in Nevada, in Clark County, except the Bundys. They were all paying their fees. They were all up to date. They were all doing what they were supposed to. The federal government shut them down. Don't you eat beef?
Richard.
Aren't you concerned about the government shutting? Well,
I haven't eaten beef since the 60s.
A lot of progressives do, and a lot of liberals do. So let's be real about this.
By going to these individual cases, criticizing Hillary Clinton or talking about the Bundy Ranch or whatever, we're wandering far afield from principles, and I think that
we're on total principle here because they have the right to pursue happiness.
Is that if I see something out here that's on public property, say that tree out there outside the window, it's on the street, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, hey, I like that tree. I think I'll cut it down, take it home. That's it. You're okay with that?
Isn't that the property
of all of us?
Yeah, but that is...
So isn't that public land in Nevada the property of all of us?
But that isn't what Bundy was doing. Bundy was helping the land. Bundy is working the land. You want to work the land? You want to help the land? Put a farmer or a rancher on it, Tom. They work the land. They help the land.
So that's Bundy was an environmentalist.
He was a law-abiding citizen doing the best he could to take care of himself and his family.
Hold on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. Sheriff Richard Mack here with us for the hour, and we'll be taking your calls, too. If you have a question for Sheriff Mack or would like to speak with him, please be courteous. Okay. Welcome back.
Well, that was a quick break.
Yeah, they are. The long break is at the bottom of the hour.
Okay, but let's just go back to one fundamental thing, and I agree with you on that, okay? Yeah. But let's just say government, we the people that I don't believe is us anymore, It's supposed to be representing us, absolutely.
Right.
And you were asking earlier on your program, what's the proper role of government? We see that in the Declaration of Independence,
right,
that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men.
Right.
To secure what rights?
Deriving their power from the
just
consent
powers,
of
from
the
from the
governed.
Consent of the governed.
And then
I, as a government
Court
official,
along, did you see what John Roberts wrote last week?
But you see, the Supreme Court has been dead wrong for a long time on a lot of issues, except on my case, of course. They got it pretty right. But anyway, the principle involved here is, we have a country based on protecting life, so we have now partial birth abortion in America brought to us by the progressives of this country.
So you're talking about the life part of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah, when life is at its most defenseless, we kill it. And for anybody in this country, anybody, who thinks it's okay, and the Constitution protects this, that when a baby is partially born, that we can murder it and kill it, I want every progressive and liberal to go watch that happen or participate in it and see what happens. We are destroying life, and we're supposed to be the country that takes care
of it. The legal abortion of viable fetuses in this country pretty much does not happen. And the few occasions where it does happen are criminally prosecuted. We had a doctor in Baltimore that was doing this. The guy's in prison right now. That's, you know, but again, rather than debating abortion,
I find
if
amazing.
You want to, if why is it that the right to life people are so concerned about, you know, four cells in a woman's uterus, you know, at conception, but they don't give a rat's ass about that child when he's 2 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old? Where's the right to life when somebody like yourself, I mean, has a heart attack without health insurance? I mean, if there's a right to life, how can you have life without access to health care?
You see, but it's my life. It's my right to control my life, not government. And that's
I'm all in favor of assisted suicide or you know, laws, the death with dying laws, but I'm not a fan of suicide for people who are not terminally ill.
Yeah,
but I mean,
well,
if you want to,
and the IRS that both parties support drives so many people to suicide and put the rest of them in prison. And that we sit here and say that, oh, but we're so magnanimous and we want to take care of people and Black Lives Matter. Then if they do, then why don't we get people out of prison that aren't supposed to be in there? White and Black and Hispanic and Asian and all the ridiculous, bureaucratic nightmares purported by our own government bureaucracies. The destruction of life, the destruction of families, the destruction of freedom, the destruction of liberty, the destruction of the pursuit of happiness by the IRS alone should just shock the conscience of every single person in this country, liberal or conservative or otherwise. I don't care. And the Democrats and the Republicans have caused that problem. They've caused the national debt.
Have caused what problem?
The IRS, the ruthlessness of the IRS, and destroying families. I didn't defend Reagan about that. Reagan said he was going to abolish the Department of Education and never did, and he should have. We don't need the federal government running our education. As stupid as we think the states might be, they were the ones who formed the federal government with very limited powers, and that's absolute historical fact.
Well,
and,
at least with the Articles
and
of
reinforced,
Confederation.
And reinforced in my decision that the federal...
Hang on. Past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And, you know, we're talking about the difference in worldviews between Sheriff Richard Mack, who describes himself as a constitutional conservative libertarian, and me. I describe myself as a progressive Democrat, you know, for lack of a better word. Although a lot of the Democratic Party is not progressive, and I mourn that.
Yeah.
I really mourn that. But let's just take a couple of simple cases, okay?
All right.
If capitalism fails, and it does periodically, it did in 1929, it did in 2008, when capitalism fails, when capitalism experiences a hiccup, and millions of people are thrown out of work, and they have no access to anything from food and housing to health care, Is it not a reasonable and appropriate function of government to step in, at least over the short term, and say, you know, you can't get a job anywhere. There are no jobs anywhere. Capitalism has failed. Every bank in the country closed the week that Franklin Roosevelt became president. I mean, capitalism really failed. To say, okay, we've got a lot that needs to be done in this country. We need to build the Hoover Dam. We need electricity out there in the West. We need to plant trees because we got the Dust Bowl from bad agricultural practices. So we're going to create the CCC. What's wrong with that?
Well, in such an emergency, I'm not saying, and I'm smart enough to know all the answers there, but I don't believe FDR made the situation better. I believe he made it worse. In fact, I think he
cut unemployment in half within 3 years.
I believe he prolonged the problem.
How?
It went 10 years. The depression was 10 years,
right.
and people were suffering for 10 years. And I believe that, you know, I believe he acted wrong.
But you know what got us out of the Great Depression?
But, the war. Some people say the war.
Which is an enormous, it was the largest government stimulus program in the history of the United States.
For the next war, so we can have government stimulus
that's the thing.
Whatnot.
War is a very inefficient form of government stimulus, because we built all this stuff here in the United States, then we shipped it over to Germany, and we bombed them with it. Right?
And then we start giving it to our police departments and sheriff's offices all across the country.
Right, which is another point on which you and I agree.
Yeah.
But my point is that The war was an inefficient stimulus, but it was a massive stimulus. And then when the war was over, Dwight Eisenhower came along and said, "Okay, we're at 128% of GDP
in terms of debt.
Let's
pay off
the debt
by building the country. More bureaucrats in America, we're going to be a lot safer, a lot better off." And you and I have
when
already
did I say that?
Well, you seem to support the bureaucrats regulating America, and we're saving the environment, and we're saving jobs.
If you want to define things, I would rather know that the air that I breathe when I walk out here is not full of acetone like it was 60 years ago.
Why
would
you trust government to take care of that for you?
Because they represent me.
The FDA lets bad stuff through all the time. We have all the opiate drugs on a legal market.
Nothing compared to countries where there's no FDA, like Somalia. I've been in India. You can walk into a pharmacy and say, you know, I'll take this or this.
So now you're comparing us to third world countries like that.
Well, that's the direction we're moving. That's the direction you want to take us, in my opinion.
I want freedom. I want government to do the.
How can you be free if you're hungry?
To principles.
How can you be free if you're hungry?
You think government bureaucracy created such a system in America that made us so great and the most powerful and the most abundant country in the world?
We are not anymore, Richard.
But I blame the progressive movement in this country for that.
The democratic socialist countries have blown right past us.
It's a bureaucratic nightmare out there, and you want more of it. And that's what I find astonishing from you.
You want a bureaucratic nightmare, you know, talk to anybody in any large corporation in America, and they pretty much control this country now. There you've got bureaucratic
nightmares.
But you're
blaming corporations, and I blame the bureaucracies with the corporations. And it's just ridiculous for us to look at the horrible things happening in this country and say, oh yeah, man, we need more government regulation.
Let me give you my pitch.
And whether you like it or not, those government regulations, especially on the Second Amendment, are illegal.
Well, that's another issue too. But you know, back to this kind of core principle. Franklin Roosevelt said, "A necessitous man is not a free man." That you're not free if you're hungry, you're not free if you're homeless, and you're not free if you don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I would add to that, you're not free if you don't have health care.
Right.
Because you are vulnerable to things that, frankly, you shouldn't be vulnerable to. And those countries that provide those things or make sure that everybody has those things with or without functioning capitalism are happier, healthier, they live longer. What's wrong with that?
But for you to equate freedom with a product that you buy down at a store, or you call an insurance company. Yes, you did. You said you're not free if you don't have health insurance.
I said if you don't have health care, there's a big difference.
Well, health care.
I would be very happy to get rid of all the health insurance companies.
Okay. Well,
you know, Medicare runs on a 2% overhead. You got these big health insurance companies, they're skimming 20, 25, 30% off the top.
Yeah,
that's
and another thing, too,
that
you should be
the commons.
You and every progressive should be so incensed by the astronomical rise of the federal budget. I mean, look at the federal budget.
$3 trillion for wars.
Yeah.
You know, another $1 trillion from the banks.
And Obama said
that
was irresponsible and unpatriotic, and he gets away with doubling that and tripling
the national the deficit, the annual deficit right now is one-third of what it was when Obama came into office. One-third.
Well, you're talking
about radically reduced.
You're talking about one statistical part of all that.
Well,
and
I'll
national
expand
debt,
if you want to get partisan,
is $18 trillion. I'm not partisan. I don't care. I don't like either one of them.
Okay.
Bush was a lousy president, and all Obama is doing is doubling down on it. That's all he has done as president.
That public
and
debt
you liberals
is,
just bow to him. Oh, he's so wonderful. And,
I frankly don't care about the national debt.
He's nothing.
The national debt is private savings. That's not the problem. The problem is that last month we had a $51 billion trade deficit. For every $1 billion in trade deficit, you lose 10,000 American jobs. We have a trade policy. The reason that our cities are falling apart, the reason why Baltimore is so bad, they used to be a thriving manufacturing center. All that stuff that they used to make there, which was, textiles.
And liberals
and stuff,
run that town completely and
did
entirely.
Did not define these trade policies. These trade policies came out of Reaganism. This idea of doing away with the tariffs.
Government
that
got
Alexander
bigger under
Hamilton
Reagan.
And George
Bush
put into place.
He was anti-government. Government got bigger, and he did not cut where he could have. Like, especially the Department of Energy that was started by Carter.
Well, that's the bomb.
What
you know,
a joke. What a joke.
Well, you want to put it under DOD? I mean, the DOD.
I don't want
just...
it at all. It has failed in every aspect that it was supposed to achieve.
Well, and we have a nuclear arsenal.
So
I mean,
we
that's
want
the whole point
so
of the DOE.
More. Department of Energy. Department of Energy. No, it was supposed to get us off OPEC oil.
Yeah, okay. All right. We'll be back with more with Sheriff Richard Mack and your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Sheriff Richard Mack in the studio with us for the hour. He's the founder of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. He's on the board of the Oath Keepers Movement. And I think I mentioned last time you were here in the studio, you are uninsured or were uninsured. I don't know if you still are.
I'm taking a job pretty soon where it looks like I'm going to get
some insurance
in August.
Okay,
I'm going to be a teacher at a charter school in Arizona.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, so
good
send
you.
All your kids out there to Heritage Academy.
Okay.
So,
but in any case, there's a page to help you out with some of your expenses at GoFundMe.com/HelpSheriffMack. M-A-C-K is how he spells his last name. So the other area where we agree is this whole issue of police behaving badly. And I just want to bring this up real quickly, and then we'll pick up phone calls for the rest of the half hour.
Yeah.
The question... There's a story, I don't have it printed out to show you, but there's a guy who blew the whistle on a fellow cop in Baltimore about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's suing the police department now because basically they put him in situations where his life was at risk intentionally by way of punishing him.
Yeah, the old Serpico movie.
Is that
it's
it?
Almost,
I never
that's
saw
Serpico. Very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar.
So is that, I mean, where are the good cops? I mean, is the police culture so rigid, so self-protecting that, I mean, we know that there are some bad cops. They're not the majority of cops.
Mm.
But the good cops aren't calling them out. And, you know, what's
therein lies the problem.
Yeah, I mean, what's the old saying? You know, all that is necessary for tyranny to succeed is that good men do nothing.
Right.
I mean.
And I think what we have sometimes happening even worse now is good men doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you and I would still disagree on a lot of these views, these political views and constitutional views and our foundational views here. And none of my views, I believe, are mine. I studied what the founding fathers said and did and what they intended, what they went through, the historical aspects of the Revolutionary War.
But they held slaves. I mean, isn't it time for us to have our own minds?
But that doesn't destroy everything else they did. And some of them didn't. And some of them really...
But you're quoting, Jefferson saying every 20 years we should reboot the country.
Well, I know he's made some mistakes, and I don't agree with that statement. I've never promoted violence ever.
Well,
ever.
He wasn't either. He
that
was
sounds
saying,
violent.
No, he was talking about rewriting the Constitution.
But they did participate in a Revolutionary War, and it was violent.
Yes. Yeah.
And
right.
They risked their lives.
Yeah.
To stand for freedom.
To create this government.
To create socialism, according to you.
To,
no.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was not. No way. That was not to create another socialistic country. Let's establish another wonderful,
libraries?
Great democracy. You will not find the word democracy in any of our foundational documents.
Our foundational documents, no.
And so, but the point with the law enforcement is we have become a state of government, that we believe that the government is always right, and the police are trained to protect government. And they're out there writing tickets, a part of this legalized plunder that Bastiat talks about in the law. And Bastiat really had it right in a lot of so many ways. And socialism, he described as legalized plunder.
Well,
so
if you're talking about Soviet socialism, I agree with you.
Well,
if you're talking about Norwegian socialism.
I'm talking about socialism, period. And,
no,
and socialism becomes the king, and it controls everything, and it owns everything. And
no,
my property
communism.
Is there.
That's not
well,
socialism.
But they're close sisters.
No, they're
close sisters.
They're really not. And, I mean, the Soviet Union used the word socialism just for the exact same reason that Hitler used the word socialism, because back then it was actually a positive word. People wanted socialism. People,
The
Social Security is socialism. Do you think we should not have Social Security?
I would rather have my money back, and I would love to sue the federal government. Give me back all my Social Security. Let me invest it on my own. I will not ask for another dime.
How do you know
it's
that?
It's my money. And they have totally
47% of Americans. No, 49% of Americans
Social
have no
Security is broke,
savings.
Tom, and you still want to trust the government that is breaking that?
Social Security's not broke. They have $2.5 trillion in a trust fund.
Ask them where the gold in Fort Knox is. These same crooks,
well, that's not Social Security.
They can't even balance their own budgets, and you want them to handle my own retirement?
Social Security has
never
missed a paycheck.
I do not want these crooks in Washington to handle my money.
Okay, so,
that's mine.
So little dispute about these numbers.
Yeah.
The average person who, in their 20s, puts money into a 401k, by the time they retire, has spent over $100,000 in fees for managing that 401k. Not to mention the fact that if the stock market crashes,
they're
screwed.
I don't need these crooks in Washington controlling my Social Security.
So you'd rather have the crooks on Wall Street doing it?
If I choose to invest in a company, that's my choice. I can find a good company,
but
I can go with the crooks.
But you can't do it without Wall Street.
But
Wall Street
survives because of the Clintons and the Obamas and the McCains and the other Republicans on both sides. They both played it, and Obama was going to straighten it out. What a bunch of baloney. I mean, I could get to cussing because he has changed nothing on Wall Street.
So you want,
he has made it worse.
So you want government regulation of Wall Street?
No, I want government to leave me alone.
Okay, but if they leave Wall Street alone, Wall Street is going to go out of its way to screw you.
Well, there are laws.
Who protects us from
title,
the good guys?
There's some that I'm not totally against, okay? I'm not. Because monopoly laws are there to protect us, and I agree with those. But also the laws on immigration are there to protect us also. And Obama makes a joke of those.
Well,
he does not follow the law.
I would go back to Reagan.
There is another man. Yeah, Reagan did not follow the law either. And Obama had his administration running guns down to Mexico, called Fast and Furious. And what did he do? He declared executive privilege to get out from underneath the investigation.
Yeah, it was a program that was started under the Bush administration, by the way.
And so are the others in Washington. They're all a bunch of crooks, and including getting away with murder. Do you know how many Mexicans were killed with those guns?
I don't.
In the several hundred.
Yeah.
And then Brian Terry, a Border Patrol agent, is also killed. Did the Obama administration come out and help that family? No, they stonewalled the entire investigation. That family still doesn't have answers. And you want to talk about all the other crimes committed? Oh, my goodness, it goes on and on. Yet we continue to say, yes, please run all these other programs because we totally trust you. God, doesn't make sense.
Okay, so my original question, who protects us from the big guys if we, the people, decide to give up our power to define the rules of commerce, which is one of the principal roles of government? In fact, you know, the Commerce Clause is in the Constitution. You're a constitutional scholar.
Right, and that has been stretched way out of proportion.
If we give up our power, the government, if we give up our power to regulate commerce, who protects us from predatory banks? Who protects us from shills who would sell us drugs that would kill us?
We get rid of all these banks that are shills for the IRS and for the Federal Reserve. We have an honest money system that our government is totally corrupted. And
so you want to go back to gold?
I would love gold and silver to be where they're supposed to be.
So when the economy expands, where are you going to get the extra gold?
But guess what? You just quoted the Constitution because it requires every state to use gold and silver. And that
for
it
their
be
coins.
That it be backed
actually,
up for that?
Actually, gold and silver are not in the Constitution.
Yeah, you're afraid so. They are.
No.
Section 10... every state is required to use gold and silver as standard for commerce.
Section 10, Article 1?
Section 10.
Show me. It's right there at the bottom under your thumb. Anyhow, while you're doing that, let me bring some callers in here, okay? Shall we? All right. Because we're burning through time here pretty fast. Alan in Glendale, California. You are on the air with,
oh, yeah, and the
with me and
there
Sheriff,
too,
Sheriff Mack.
Hello, Sheriff Mack. I was wondering, take a company like Google. Sergey Brin and Larry Page, they were given National Science Fellowships to help in the early infancy of that company. They worked on the Stanford Digital Library, and it really helped them out create Google. Now, what do you think is the role of, say, a private-public partnership in terms of Google could be essential in helping create a great infrastructure in the United States? At what point...
Let Google run with it. I don't care.
But Google... No, his point is Google wouldn't exist if it wasn't for government booting
really
the guys
think,
who founded it, and also government created the Internet, DARPANET. Remember?
No.
It was... The
Al Gore
was,
said he did.
He,
another
he signed,
lie in
he actually co-authored the legislation that created DARPANET, which is what created the Internet. So to Alan's question, what's the appropriate, or is there any appropriate role for government? Should we have just said, okay, we're not going to have an Internet, we'll just wait until somebody does it?
The constitutional role and its assignment in here, no problem. It is to regulate interstate commerce, not intra. That's a huge difference.
Right.
Sounds pretty close, but it's a huge difference. And they've overshot that and stretched it. Even my Supreme Court decision talks about that, because they wanted to also force sheriffs to participate in gun control because it was part of their power according to the Commerce Clause. And that was shot down.
So you don't want government to protect us from the paper mill down the street that's blowing poison out into the air. Do I have that right?
I don't want government shutting down the industry in Oregon and Washington and Arizona like they have.
If there's a paper mill down the street,
all in the name of the environment.
If there's a paper mill down the street that's poisoning us by putting poisons into our environment, how do we deal with that?
And
without government?
Only the big federal government can do something about that.
That is a ridiculous notion. So how do we deal with that?
The state and counties can stop that just as easy.
So you're in favor of government, you're just not in favor of federal government.
Well,
you want to go back
to
the Articles of Confederation?
There's a lot more regulatory authority within the states and counties than there is with the federal government. And the federal government wants to control absolutely every facet of our lives.
So in Texas, for example, a town, I think it was Belmont or something like that, just banned fracking. So what did the Republicans in the Texas legislature do? They banned towns from banning fracking. Isn't that the exact opposite of what you're talking about?
Well, you know, for me to tell you all the ins and outs of fracking and all the political ramifications, they simply said
you as a town cannot decide what you want happening in the city limits of your town. That sounds to me like something you would oppose.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, okay. Sheriff Mack will be right back with us. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman, Sheriff Richard Mack. Welcome back. Doug in Jamul, California. You are on the air with Sheriff Mack. Well, we can get to that some other time, Sheriff.
Yeah, that's all right. Keep going.
Doug, go for it.
Hey, Tom, I'm glad you took my call, and I'm really impressed that you actually have Sheriff Mack online. He said, Sheriff, you know, you're in the belly of the beast. You got the number one progressive talk show host. He has disciples in this chat room on YouTube.
I know who Tom is.
Not one of them wants to hear what you have to say. Hello?
Yeah, well, we're listening, Doug.
Yeah, we're listening. Sounds great.
Okay, here's my question. I took an oath to the Constitution 4 times during my military tenure, and I understand the Constitution as you understand it, not as Tom Hartman understands it. Now, here, isn't progressivism sedition to the Constitution because they want to change the text of the Constitution without going through the Article 5 amendment process to change the intent? They just want 51% of the vote, and they want to be able to change the Constitution to anything they want it to mean.
Doug is one of our regular conservative callers. I don't recall ever having said that I would like to rewrite the Constitution, other than I would like to rewrite the way the Supreme Court rewrote the Constitution. But
well,
in any case,
you and I agree that the Supreme Court gets it wrong a lot.
Oh, and they always have. I mean,
always.
It's just. And
I mean, the separate but equal doctrine. I mean, come on.
They have been stealing power ever since 1803. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, you got a question for Sheriff Mack?
Yeah, but first I wanted to say, Sheriff, don't give an attorney any retainer for that suing for your Social Security money back. You know, that case was solved in 1938 in Halvering versus Davis.
Yeah, I've been told that before, and I would like to do it just because I feel so strongly that it's my money and they act like it's theirs. And they even send me a little thing that shows how much money is in that account. But if I ever wanted to use it and pretend it was mine, no, I would be stopped. I've sued the federal government before and won. I don't believe that one would be winnable.
Yeah.
It is your money to throw away. Let me ask you this: in terms of what the Constitution means, you said that the you believe in the Bill of Rights as was originally intended. And I'm going to ask you, I want to investigate how you know what that means, given that Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 84 did write that what those rights mean will ultimately be determined by the courts. So what I'm going to ask you here is, what do you believe, this is my question, upon what principles do you believe the Constitution itself was founded? And I'd like to follow up.
Well, Madison also did a lot of the writing of the Federalist Papers and a lot more, and he was also considered the father of our Constitution, and he nailed one right on the head when he said we would lose more freedom to those in power by gradual and silent encroachments than by any other sudden usurpation.
He said that, by the way, in the context of a quote that had to do with war.
And that's where we are today. And Lincoln also warned us that if we ever lost our freedom, we would never be, first he started out, we would never be destroyed by an outside enemy. And I will totally agree with that. The greatest enemy is inside America. And it's us. And it's our government. And it's overregulation. And it's
I think it's the Confederate States of America.
No, come on.
I really do. And their official voice, Fox so-called news. Paul, I'm sorry. No time for the follow-up. We're out of time here. But we'll be right. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's see here. Free Speech TV callers. Okay. John, I beg your pardon?
Hello, hello.
Oh, that's right. Hey, John, you're on the air with Richard Mack and me. Question?
Well, I think I'm a little bit more on his side than yours.
That's fine.
Very, very quickly about the TPP. The fact that the Republicans haven't done anything for the little guy, and they've blocked everything Obama's been doing, the fact that they're on board with this should tell you everything you need to know about it. And if Obama thinks he can make a fair trade policy, he should start off with NAFTA. That was one of his campaign promises, was he was going to fix NAFTA.
Yeah, there you go.
As far as your guest there, I assume that you're in favor of returning to the enumerated powers in the Constitution, right?
Well, when I said I support the Bill of Rights as intended by our founders, I mean, you need to look at that. And the Second Amendment is being completely destroyed. And it is, again, that the rights of the people shall not be infringed. And that means hinder. And yet we have a BATF that spends millions and millions of dollars to go after law-abiding citizens with guns. We arrest Sheena Allen from Pennsylvania. She goes to jail, would have been, spent 3 years in prison by required mandatory three-year sentence, has had her career destroyed. She's a black American. She's a wonderful person. She's in the medical profession, a professional woman, single mother with two children. And she's facing jail and prison because of an out-of-control government that doesn't know and understand the intent of the Second Amendment.
What did she do that got her in trouble?
She had her concealed carry permit and her gun in her car. She went from Pennsylvania to New Jersey.
Oh, so she went out of
state. And a Republican saved her, not a Democrat, not Jesse Jackson, not Al Sharpton.
Don't states have reciprocal agreements?
No. Sorry.
They don't?
And so she gets arrested by a cop, and a cop who has sworn an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, who wouldn't know the Constitution if it hit him in the head, never been trained in it. I guarantee you he has not.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the guard of the Republic, the guard of freedom and liberty, and he arrests this woman, and yet no one, not the NAACP, there were no protests to protect her, but people like me now are going to start a fundraiser for her.
Yeah.
Miriam Carey, who was shot and killed just a few blocks from here, nobody did anything for her. She should not have been killed. The police totally overreacted. It's against policies to be shooting at a car with a child in it.
Oh, this is the woman who drove into the White House.
The Capitol.
Yeah, the Capitol.
And she got shot five times.
That story vanished in 24 hours.
I know.
It was incredible.
And she was driving away from the cops when they killed her, shot her five times.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand the hypocrisy of all of that, but I do understand the intent of the Bill of Rights, and it was to keep government out of our lives. And it's not happening, and it's because simply our leaders, especially in Washington, do not know or care.
Okay, back to my original question, because I still have not heard an answer to this.
Okay.
There's a paper mill down the street or an oil refinery down the street.
And they're poisoning the water or whatever.
My air that
I gave you an answer.
Okay, what?
We do not need the federal government out there regulating.
Oh, that's right. You want the local
government.
What if it's a giant? And what if it's the paper mill of a giant transnational corporation, and the local government does not have the resources to take them on? What if they've got enough lawyers?
So we pay, all of us pay for a huge bureaucracy to be established in Washington, D.C. to take care of it for us?
I think that's what
we've
done.
We don't need to waste that money, Tom.
No, ExxonMobil made $48 billion in profit. They could swamp any town, even any state in this country with lawyers.
Go to a movie. Noble. It's out right now.
Okay.
And this was a lady, her last name was Noble. I don't remember her first name.
Yeah.
But she fought government in Asia, and one of the countries was Mongolia, and she took care of all the displaced children. She had a dream and a crusade to go after and help people.
When a corporation
by corporations
that is harming
by
people,
government, and she saved 700,000 children. Government didn't do it. This woman on her crusade did it.
Yeah.
But it's still the same. It's still the same. Other people.
Who protects
us? That's how we do it.
Who protects us from billionaires and big corporations?
How about the huge corporations in the state? How about politicians who do their jobs? How about sheriffs who investigate those types of crimes
and go and prosecute if there's a big government law?
No. There's already, if you're poisoning people, who changed America on that? Aaron Brockovich. Yeah. She did that. It wasn't government.
Richard Nixon.
Government covered it up. And government is part of the problem, not the solution. And when Reagan said government isn't the solution, it is the problem, I totally agree with that. He came up with but he talked better than he did.
Yeah.
And all politicians do, and that's where we're at. And I just can't believe that someone is as smart as you are and as learned as you are and others that are...
Great debating technique.
That keep trusting these politicians. As long as they're progressive,
please,
then we're going to let them break the law and they can do whatever they want.
Please do not put words in my mouth.
Well...
Please do not put words in my mouth.
I've heard your defense of Democrats that really...
I trust Bernie Sanders. Period. I mean, there's a couple of good...
If Bernie Sanders is running against Jeb Bush,
yeah,
I'll probably go with Bernie.
Seriously.
But I would probably go third party. But if those were my two choices, I'll take Bernie.
Yeah. Well, Jeb Bush is pretty toxic. I mean, in 98, he was.
Well, who's going to regulate his toxicity? I mean, come on.
We the people. That's the whole point.
You would think we don't.
Well, because the Supreme Court said that the billionaires have louder voices than us and that's the law.
But you know what? No, it's not because of the voices. It's because we have an ignorant populace that doesn't know and understand the Constitution or our history, and Jefferson commented about that. If you expect to be ignorant and free, it's never going to happen.
And it never has happened.
And
Jefferson,
it never has.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you.
That's the greatest indictment that you and I agree on.
Right. And we have to figure out a way out of this infotainment media culture. Sheriff Richard Mack, GoFundMe.com/HelpSheriffMack and CSPOA.org as in constitutional.
And we promise we won't force you to donate. You can do it on your own.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, it's not a tax. Sheriff Mack, thanks for dropping by. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back. I'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mary Nickel is on the line with us, the Arctic Campaign Specialist with Greenpeace USA. Greenpeace.org is the website. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This week, the Obama administration has authorized the Dutch oil company, Shell Oil, to drill in the American part of the Arctic. What are the details of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, you know, President Obama isn't living up to his legacy of being the climate hero that he promised to be when he first became president. And so he has given so far the green light to Shell to drill in the Chukchi Sea. And so there's two things that we're up to right now. We're working and hoping that, you know, President, the Obama administration, there still are a few more steps. So we're hoping that they'll eventually come to their senses and see that they can't allow Arctic drilling and claim to, you know, be working to reduce America's contributions to climate change. But as well as there's a local process happening here in Seattle where we're working to try and get the Port of Seattle to rescind the lease that they've signed with Shell to host their drilling rigs here here in town.
Hmm. So, excuse me. So the Port of Seattle is a choke point for this whole process, essentially?
That's right. So in January it became public that the Port of Seattle for months had been having behind closed-door meetings with companies and contractors to sign a lease to host Shell's drilling rigs here in town. And if you know anything about Seattle, that didn't sit well with people. So,
it's a fairly progressive town.
Yes, very progressive, very environmental town. And so just recently, the mayor gave the port a great opportunity to rescind the lease by saying that, you know, the use for the Terminal 5 here in Seattle is a different use than the environmental permit. And so right now there's an interesting battle happening where yesterday, for example, we had a five-hour port commission hearing in town. There were 3 hours of very passionate public comment and then 2 hours of negotiations amongst the port. What happened coming out of that meeting is that the port essentially has asked one of the companies working with Shell to not allow the rigs to come to town until they're able to, you know, get the right permitting and have a, you know, further review. But as well as, you know, we're hoping that the port really takes the opportunity to be a climate champion and rescinds the lease for good.
Wow. Wow. So the Port of Seattle has the potential to stop, basically. Shell, they don't have any other options for places to put their oil rigs, rigging, you know, stage their drilling out of?
Yeah, so... You know, it's day by day we're getting more updates. You know, Shell has said that they have plan Bs, but as far as we know, the plan A is definitely to come to Seattle and to host their rigs here.
Right.
And what we're working to do is try and make that as difficult as possible, because we know drilling for oil up in the Arctic, there's such a small window that the ice is actually melted.
Right.
And it's kind of wild to think that Shell's trying to, you know, get to these areas that previously we weren't able to get to, and they're finally able to do that because of climate change. But there's such a small window that any delays will be helpful in trying to stop this thing from happening.
Yeah, remarkable. Remarkable. What can the citizens, what can people who live in Seattle or who don't, who agree with your position, or arguably disagree, I suppose, either, you know, what can they do? Where, how, is this subject to, you know, citizen input? Is there, you know, or is the process just, you know, you all working with the port and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Great question. So the citizens here in Seattle just have amazing networks, and they've been fighting dirty fossil fuel infrastructure here for a long time, been fighting oil trains and coal exports. And all of those groups are really working really well together and activating around this issue. So actually this coming Saturday, there is going to be a family-friendly kayak protest happening starting at 10 a.m. at Seacrest Park in town, and folks can come out to that. And if people aren't, you know, don't want to be on the water, there's also some on-land programming that will be starting at 1 o'clock in the area as well.
Right.
And then for people who want to help, you know, right now the most important place to be putting pressure is on the Port of Seattle, because they have been given a great opportunity by the mayor of Seattle to hit pause and rethink their position and rethink what they've done here. And so if you head to our website, greenpeace.org, you can find out more information about you know, some online petitions and actions that you can take to contact the Port of Seattle directly.
Great stuff. Mary Nickel with the Greenpeace.org. She's the Arctic Campaign Specialist. Mary, thanks for dropping by today.
Thanks, Tom.
Great talking with you. Leon in St. James City, Florida. Hey, Leon, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just moved to Florida, and Bernie Sanders has made a Democrat out of me. Was a independent progressive.
Uh-huh.
But they have a closed primary, and the only way you can vote for Bernie is to register as a Democrat.
Right.
And I wonder if they have the same situation in other states.
I don't remember the number of states that have closed primaries. I think it's a little less than half of them. I'm actually a fan of closed primaries because I grew up in Michigan where we had open primaries. I don't know what the status is right now, but back in the 60s when I was a kid, George Wallace, you know, segregation now, segregation forever. George Wallace was running for president as a Democrat, and Republicans in the state of Michigan said, let's mess with the Democratic Party nationally by all voting for George Wallace in the primary, because the Republican candidate in that election, and I forget which election it was, but the Republican candidate was pretty much a foregone conclusion. And so many Republicans turned out to vote in the Democratic primary that Michigan actually sent George Wallace to the Democratic convention. It was the only state that did.
Well, that's an exception.
Pardon?
I think that would be the exception now.
Yeah, well, no, there's still an awful lot of, you know, nasty stuff that goes on. The benefit of a closed primary is if you join the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, it's like joining a club. You know, you're part of a membership organization, and as such, the members of that organization should be able to determine its policies, its positions, and its leadership, not people who are not members of that organization. And that's why I'm actually in favor of closed primaries and not open primaries. And, you know, so if you want, Leon, to vote for somebody who is running as a Democrat, as Bernie will have to do in Florida, then you have to re-register as a Democrat. I realize it's inconvenient, but making sense? Okay. Leon, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck. Good luck. Isaac in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Isaac, we got a minute. What's up?
Yeah, I was actually calling it. I think it's kind of cool that your former guest is getting a government job, because they pay good wages and they have benefits.
No, I don't think he's going to get a government job. I think he's going to work for one of the conservative organizations. Oh, that's right, a charter school. Yeah, so no, it's a private for-profit corporation that takes government money. You're right.
But what I also wanted to say is that they hear a lot of conservatives talk about using going to the original intent of the Constitution, but the original intent of the 14th Amendment was to be sure that freed slaves got equal protection, but now it's being used by corporations to say corporations are people so they can have influence in our government and everything else. So
right.
I don't know if they want to go back to the original intent of that amendment.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And there are many of us who would like to go back to the original intent of that amendment. Isaac, thanks a lot for the call. It's 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. You can drop into our live free chat room at TomHartman.com and hang out with some of the finest minds on earth. Welcome back. Let's see here. Amy in Rockville, Maryland, watching on TomHartman.com. Hey, Amy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. So I was listening to Sheriff Mack, and I love the way libertarians say, you know, people deserve freedom and, you know, I have to be able to control my life, except when it comes to women. When it comes to women, all of a sudden, and I think it's very ironic that you were talking about, you know, cattle, because I think women are treated, as Carol J. Adams points out in her book, Sexual Politics of Meat, women are treated as cattle and as a resource.
Yeah.
When it comes to birth control and abortion. And so, I mean, I just find it very hypocritical and ironic that libertarians love to talk about freedom.
Yeah. Excellent point. It's a very excellent point. Amy, thank you for calling and making it. Ron in Yoder, Indiana. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Yeah, I remember when Reagan became president. My grandfather, he was just out of his mind about it. He thought that now there was going to be another depression, and you know he's pretty much right. We almost had a depression.
Oh, we had the biggest stock market crash since 1929, right after Reagan's big tax cuts.
Right, and he deregulated trucking and the airline industry, and that also is why the trucking industry now with NAFTA has really just been decimated.
Yeah.
I'm a retired Teamster, and when they put NAFTA through, the trucks that started rolling through Mexico that were unregulated, it's just been a disaster.
Yeah.
And it's been a disaster for the union.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. Reaganism has done, in my opinion, more to harm this country than any external enemy, you know, in a long, long time. It's pretty grim. Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you very much for the call, Ron. Patty in Harstein Island, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Patty, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good afternoon. And you got it right, Harstein Island. Well, I wanted to ask Sheriff Mack, he never answered your question regarding getting money out of politics. And I really wanted to hear what he had to say, because then I was going to mention him as far as privatization. It didn't seem to go too well for the privatized fire departments they had in New York long ago,
right,
when there was, you could only have your house put out if you paid really well. And I would have liked to have heard his comments. So I stayed on the line because I didn't want to be rude by hanging up. But that was my
Patty, your phone just went nutty. Are you make sure your thumb is not over the microphone or something? I can't hear you.
Sorry, I'm plugged in. I'm running out of power. I just would have liked to have heard his opinion on privatizing the fire department and how it didn't work out, and him answering your question about getting money out of politics. I think.
Yeah, yeah. These are many good questions, and we probably should the next time he comes on prioritize, rather than putting on guests who agree with him, putting on guests like you who agree with me, so that you can have a conversation with him. That was my hope, and
we the people are listening, and we the people will call back.
Okay, thank you, Patty. Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. It is 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And Victoria, thank you so kindly for your considerate willingness to postpone your presence here on our show by about a half hour so that I could wrap up that hour with Sheriff Matt.
Oh, happy to.
And so what's going on in the world?
Investigators are looking at the possibility that excessive speed was a factor in the derailment of an Amtrak train on its way from Washington, D.C. to New York last night in a fatal crash that killed at least 7 people. It derailed around Philadelphia. It appears to have been traveling at more than 100 miles an hour as it entered a sharp curve where it went off the rails. Now, the speed limit in that section of track drops to 50 miles an hour, according to the Federal Railroad Administration.
So it looks like operator error.
They are not saying whether it was operator error or not yet. They do have the black box.
Yeah. It would either be operator error or something went terribly wrong mechanically and they couldn't slow the train down.
Right, exactly. So they don't know which it is yet, and they're going to obviously be looking at that. And we don't know yet who the 7-ish dead are and whether the driver is among them. I have not seen that anywhere, so I don't know whether that, you know, whether that person can be questioned or not.
Right. Meanwhile, we spend $1.4 billion on our rail system. China is spending over $120 billion this year on their rail system.
Yes, and the House Appropriations Committee is marking up legislation today that would slash funds for Amtrak by 18.18%.
Wow.
The measure includes $1.1 billion for the passenger railroad next year. That is a $251 million cut from what its levels are now. Now, President Obama asked for almost $2.5 billion, a lot more than what he's previously asked for. So it's going to be a very interesting hearing. It was going to be interesting anyway because Democrats were going to ask for more. Now, what Chairman Harold Rogers of Kentucky, a Republican, is saying, look, majority Republicans are hamstrung. They're stuck because of sequestration, the automatic spending cuts that are forcing a freeze in the operating budgets of domestic agencies. Nothing they can do. We have no choice but to abide by the law, Rogers said. But the White House and Democrats are saying, oh, really? Because we're going to thwart your efforts, Republicans, to increase the Pentagon's budget if domestic agencies aren't given comparable relief.
Hmm.
Because they've been increasing the Pentagon's budget by $38 billion, a 7% increase that matches President Obama's overall request. They've padded those war accounts because they're exempt from spending limits. So we may have a bit of a budget war.
So the sequestration did not extend to the DOD?
Well, it's a padding. There's a bit of budgetary chicanery going on.
Okay. All right.
Which is way above my pay grade.
Yeah, I see that you're in the White House now. Anything
else? Well, yes. What is new? It's not quite new. It's from yesterday. But White House spokesman Josh Earnest, if I had counted, in fact, if I had been Dana Milbank, the wonderful columnist from The Washington Post, and I wish he'd been there today, Dana Milbank would have counted how many times Josh Earnest used the words procedural snafu.
To describe what happened in the Senate yesterday?
What happened in the Senate yesterday over President Obama's trade bill, which was scuppered temporarily by Democrats who wouldn't allow it to come to the floor. But if Josh Earnest said it once, he probably said it 30 or 40 times, and I am not exaggerating.
So this was his way of avoiding saying that the White House lost the vote?
It was a procedural snafu, Tom.
Oh, okay. Oh, pardon me. I should.
Yes.
How could I have missed that?
And these things happen all the time.
Oh, yeah. Republicans have been filibustering bills for 6 years.
This is
finally the Democrats do.
And this is his point. It's a procedural snafu.
Amazing.
It was quite a thing. Yeah. Meanwhile, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, says he's shocked at how little information the National Security Agency is collecting through American phone records. In fact, he says the American public should be less worried about privacy and should be more keen at having their records swiped. He said it's beyond belief how little data is part of the program, talking about the Section 215 of the Patriot Act, the part that goes around gobble, 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 scooping up the metadata
right.
of every phone call that you make, how long you're on the phone, who you're on the phone to, and when the phone call's made.
So let me get
Not
this straight. The data sweeps being done by our federal government, which the Second Circuit Court last week ruled were illegal.
Correct.
Bob Corker wants more of.
Bob Corker doesn't think we should be less worried about privacy, and he thinks they don't get enough data.
We don't need no stinking Fourth Amendment.
He didn't say that.
Yeah, I did.
Meantime, the House today is expected to easily pass a bill called the USA Freedom Act that would rein in the NSA and extend expiring portions of the Patriot Act.
Yeah, but it's only reining it in relatively slightly.
Relatively slightly, exactly, exactly. It's not really a rein. It's more of a, well, it's more of a shower.
Yeah. Or if we're using rein in as in on a leash, it's one of those 25-foot leashes with a spring on it where you can...
Yes, it is. I was using rein and drizzle, exactly.
Yeah.
The Vatican today officially recognized the state of Palestine in a new treaty finalized today.
Now, wasn't that just rolling it over from... They used to recognize the PLO.
Right. Well, this is different. This is saying that Palestine is a state. And, of course, the Vatican, as you know, is a state.
Right.
So this treaty concerns the activities of the Catholic Church in Palestinian territory, but it says that it is a state, and the Israelis are ticked off and saying that the move hurts peace prospects. I don't think the Americans are terribly pleased either.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And there are, you know, Christian Palestinians and Catholic Palestinians. Family.
Right.
Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Free-Down. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Back with your calls after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, what a day. A wild day. It looks like, you know, this train going over 100 miles an hour, this is, how do you say that? Not good. That said, trains travel over 100 miles an hour all over the world. They travel over 200 miles an hour all over the world. But here, we don't have the infrastructure, you know, because 35 years of Reaganism has just stopped funding anything that might help the public good. Gary in Minneapolis. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you. Well, I'd like to say something about the sheriff if I have time later. But in 1960, Humphrey, after he lost the primary, he brought Kennedy to Minneapolis to show him off, and it was going to be a really close election. I was 14, and my folks were working with the Democrats and the unions. Anyways, it was so inspiring, I'll never forget it. He was. People were proud to be liberals then, both Kennedy and Humphrey. I got two pieces of information trivia here, and I wonder how many people know a Catholic president gave us family planning, and that they were saying at the time it was really a big issue that they were saying the Pope was going to run the country if he got in.
Yeah.
And civil rights, my father once said civil rights would have taken many more years to get if it hadn't been for the terrible way Kennedy was killed.
Could be. Lyndon Johnson was very committed to that process. As was Hubert Humphrey.
Yeah, Johnson was a master at work in the Senate, too. And a few things I'd like to say about that guest, that sheriff, was this had proven the failed trickle-down of Hoover and the Republicans is a big failure. And the success of Roosevelt's demand-side New Deal and demand-side economics was a huge success.
Yeah.
The one thing about these big-money conservatives, they always cry about taxes. Well, they push the taxes onto the poor and the working people in this country by getting rid of income taxes and estate taxes, stuff
yeah.
like that.
Well, I can tell you, Sheriff Mack is not a big-money conservative. In fact, he's broke because of his heart attack. That's why he's got a GoFundMe page, you know, GoFundMe.com/HelpSheriffMack. You know, he refused to take Obamacare because he believes he's standing on principle. He doesn't think that the government should be in the health insurance business. And so he refused to take Obamacare, and then he had a heart attack. And, well, you know, it's like,
you know,
man.
Am I still on?
Say what? Yeah, you're still on.
It was said about Hoover, he never knew what it was like to have an empty stomach or go hungry. And Roosevelt could empathize or understand it much better because of his struggles with his disability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right, Gary.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time.
Sure. Bye. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to AM 950. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. You know, how do you say his name? Sheriff Mack? Or?
Yeah, he's a sheriff, and or he was a sheriff. He's no longer a sheriff. He's a retired sheriff. And his name is Richard Mack, M-A-C-K.
Thank you. Okay. Well, when I hear him, he sends me because he goes from one extreme to the other, and he always talks about government out. Why is government over our lives? I'm a woman. They want to tell me what health care I get. I'm a woman. They want me to, what to choose for my own life. Then they want to tell us what we should believe in. So I don't know where he loses that conversation.
Yeah.
And it just, and then he turns around and ends the call with you, telling you that he's going to vote for Bernie Sanders if he has to run. Judd Bush. I'm like, there's some psychosis going on here, and he's not on the line. So, but I I think you know what I mean.
I got to tell you, Denise, when Louise and I lived in Vermont in 2000, in that presidential election, Bernie Sanders was up for re-election in the House. That happens every 2 years. And George W. Bush was running against Al Gore for president. And Louise and I drove around rural Vermont, particularly up in the Northeast Kingdom, which is a very, very conservative part of Vermont. And you would see house after, I mean, literally miles of George Bush for president, bright red George Bush for president signs, bright blue Bernie Sanders for House of Representatives signs. Conservatives know that, you know, when they hear Bernie talk, they may not agree with all of his positions, but they know that he is an honest man. And I think a lot of Americans would rather have somebody who is honest, even if they disagree with them, than you know, another willful waffle, you know.
Yep.
You know, we're sick and tired of politicians who say one thing and do another.
Can I ask you one other question?
Sure.
I wrote it on your website too, because this is a tool that I think we need to produce for Bernie and for us people who want to discount what some of these people that go off on the Constitution and how they interpret it. If we had a one-page document or something we could paste on our Facebook really quick or tweet or just say, nope, here, look at this. This is, you know, you cannot do this to me because of our Constitution. I have a right to believe in what I believe. You know, the talking points.
Right.
So just as a suggestion, that would be such a great tool to have, because I'm finding that I can't find a very succinct way of laying facts out so somebody else that has a hard time disputing our Constitution and what we really are free to do. So just an idea.
Okay.
An idea for Bernie.
Okay. Thank you, Denise. Thank you. Great to hear from you. Stephen in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Stephen, what's up?
Tom, I haven't talked to you for about 2 years. You practically hung up on me the last time.
You are the American Monetary Institute guy?
I'm the director of the American Monetary Institute and
founder
of it from 1996. And we work with Dennis Kucinich in putting together the legislation that actually fixes the banking and monetary problem. And he introduced it into Congress. Went through 3 years of nonpartisan legal counsel work in the Congress, and then has been ignored. It's unfortunate, but it is there on the shelf. It can be taken off the shelf by any smart congressman, senator, or rep, and reintroduced, and we got a solution there.
Hmm.
But I was calling you because of the comments made by the ex-chef sheriff on gold and silver. No state shall make anything but gold and silver money. He's really not read all of that Article 1, it's Section 10, Section 8 on the coining of money. I can read it very quickly if you want.
Article 1, Section 8, to coin money, regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures.
Yes.
But there's a place. There's also a place in the Constitution Did you ever find it, Shane?
Don't understand about that.
Okay.
Look at the word coin. It's a small c.
Right.
Other places, it's a capital C. When it's a small c, and the studies on this have been done by Nadelson out of Harvard, really beautiful stuff, one of, I think, the best stuff that's ever come out of Harvard on money. And he showed, and you can get that on our website, by the way, free. Nadelson showed that when it's a small c, it's a verb.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference.
Hmm.
Very big difference. And in essence, at that time, our money was fiat money. And that's what this is supposed to put into the hands of the Congress. Now, unfortunately, yeah. In 1913, the Congress delegated this to the Federal Reserve, and it's been disastrous ever since. That's what Kucinich put into bill form and introduced,
yeah.
Took that power back to the Congress.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the Fed should basically come under the Treasury Department. I mean, the functions, most of the functions that it performs are pretty useful, but it shouldn't be doing
the
it as a...
The parts that are good could be kept, and Kucinich took the parts that are bad and threw them out.
Yeah.
And it's there, it can be taken off the shelf and put in, and the work has been done. But the progressives have to wise up.
Yeah.
They have to understand that. And when you look at the other things that Kucinich put into the Congress, they're fabulous things that progressives say they want. But when somebody puts it in, they ignore it.
Yeah.
So we've got a problem in that sense. And I hope that you will do something to correct that, because you're smart enough to understand these things.
Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen. Thank you for the call and for your kind comments. Martin in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Martin, what's up?
Yeah, hi. Gosh, if I were a conservative, I'd love to be on your show, because you are the nicest guy of these people. I mean, I think you're nothing but a gentleman.
Well, he's and sitting right next to me, and he's probably got a concealed weapons permit.
Well, that's possible, too. Anyway, the thing is that argument about the word democracy is nowhere in the Constitution. The word Bible is nowhere in the Bible. But, you know, the Bible grumpers would certainly, that doesn't stop them from saying the Bible is the greatest thing ever written, the Word of God and all the rest of it. So it doesn't really matter whether it's in the Constitution. And I always make a distinction between our founding soldiers and our founding fathers.
Okay.
Our founding soldiers, I think, fought for an idea that was going to bring our country in a different place than it was. If they didn't want to just make an American aristocracy to replace the British one. They had Washington worked hard. When you read histories of that period, well, he had to work very hard to get soldiers to stay in the army. I mean, we were almost defeated on a couple of occasions because people deserted and so on. They weren't sure what they were fighting for. But in the end, when that declaration came out, it was very clear that that was the driving mechanism that made the soldiers want to fight. And when you look at the Declaration, it's very clear what they were fighting for.
Right. Yeah, I don't...
Unfortunately, the Constitution later became, you know, like all political documents, a horse trading show, and the worst part of it, of course, being that we essentially legalized slavery at that time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, but your show is always great. I love to listen to it. One little idea that I have I'd like to throw out there, and maybe one day if I can get you a reply in an email. I have a proposal for crimes against democracy that would mirror crimes against humanity.
Huh.
I believe it's that serious.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, Martin. I think that we're experiencing crimes against democracy. I think they start with the Supreme Court. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, back with your calls right after this. And welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Good day, Professor. Three quick points. Regarding Mr. Mack, if we didn't have the Internet and its advances, I wonder if he still refute the health care from the government, such as he says. Number two, the Constitution, in large part, it does have its flaws or whatever, but I don't think we have a problem with the Constitution. We have been problems with its interpretation, how people want to move it. And the last point, I want you to go in depth, please, regarding expatriates and why that is. But I think we can tie that in with why the government it's so, you know, bad to these people why our infrastructure is crumbling and why we have the ills in society that we do. Please go into the expat.
Well, you know, number one, I can't speak for Sheriff Mack. Number two, I agree with you. Number three, with regard to expats, we have more people coming into the country than going out of the country. The people who are leaving the country and voluntarily giving up their citizenship are few and far between, and typically they're doing it because of a deep and abiding bond to another country. They've married somebody, they've lived in another country for 20 years, they want to become a citizen. It's a country that doesn't allow dual citizenship. There have been a couple of people, you know, wealthy people who have left saying that they don't want to pay taxes, but you know, if they're gonna move to another developed country, they're actually gonna pay more taxes than in the United States. So, you know, the rich folks by and large are not leaving this country, and pretty much nobody. You know, it's we don't have an expat problem. We have a lot of people, you know, a lot of middle class retired folks who are moving to Mexico and Panama and Costa Rica. I mean, there's huge American retirement communities. And they're doing that because Social Security pays so little that it's hard to live on Social Security in the United States, whereas if you take that exact same money, you can live quite well in Mexico or Panama. You can have, you know, a house. You can have help. You can have, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but isn't there a measure in place right now that's keeping them from leaving the country? Those
no.
Want to voluntarily, especially
no.
Celebrities.
No, no, no. There's nothing that prevents people from leaving the country. You can leave the country anytime you want.
Yeah, I've been reading, though. I don't know. Maybe I've been misinformed, but I've been reading some material that's stated to the contrary.
There must be special circumstances or contexts then, Brian, because, I left the country for a year. I didn't give up my citizenship. I just got a work permit in Germany and moved over there. But, you know, it was... nobody stops you at customs and says, are you leaving the country? You don't have to get permission from anybody. The only time you need permission to go anywhere is with the exception of Cuba. I think Cuba and maybe North Korea are the only two countries where the United States says specifically you can't go there. But every place else, you've got to ask them, may I come here? I had to get a visa from the Indian government to go to India. I had to get a visa from the Russian government to go to Russia. I am assuming they still require that. So you have to ask, you have to go to the embassy of those countries and say, you know, may I please come? But maybe that's what you're thinking of. It's damn hard, though, to become a citizen of the developed countries of the world as an American. It's very, very hard. You have to bring a lot of money in. You have to start a business and you have to hire people and you have to, I mean, you know, they're basically, you know, what's in it for us? Why should we care?
Right.
But, you know, the other thing, though, I mentioned this yesterday, this doc who wrote this article about how she's moving, this physician, she's moving from Rochester, New York to Windsor, Ontario, because she's sick and tired of dealing with the health insurance companies in the United States. And she said that over 100 doctors have done the same thing so far. I mean, that's astonishing. So we've got, you know, a net outflow of physicians. That's bizarre. To Canada. Brian, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. I was just calling because, just in reference to Sheriff Mack, who was on not too long ago, he had mentioned that the word democracy actually isn't in our Constitution. And I'm somebody who quotes you a lot as far as telling people, you know, democracy is not a spectator sport.
Right.
But how is it that if we are technically speaking not a democracy but rather a constitutional republic, how does that work as far as being a government by the people and for the people? I'm just a little confused on that. They don't really mention.
Yeah, this has to do with the politics of getting the Constitution passed. At the time in 1787, we were operating under the Articles of Confederation. We were basically 13 very strong states and a very weak federal government, and it was not working.
Okay.
And we were on the verge of flying apart. And so they got together in Philadelphia in August of 1787 and spent the month basically writing the Constitution. And then James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, and with a little help from John Jay, went out to sell this thing to the American people. It took 2 years to sell the Constitution before it was ratified in 1789 and George Washington was made our first president. And during those 2 years, the sales pitch that James Madison put together, and you can read this in Federalist, I think it's Federalist number 10, the sales pitch that he put together was that up until that point in time, if basically if you'd looked in a dictionary under the word democracy, it would have said, you know, a government of, by, and for the people, or words to that effect, see republic. And if you looked up republic, it would say government of, by, and for the people, see democracy. In other words, the words were interchangeable. Generally, we refer to the Roman Republic and the Greek democracy because the word democracy comes from demos, which is a Greek word, and I think that the word republic comes from Latin. But basically, they were interchangeable. And James Madison, in an effort to sell the Constitution, came up with this sales pitch. I mean, you know, it was kind of a Frank Luntzism. And he said, democracy is mob rule, right? Majority rule. We are not a democracy. And in that, he was right. I mean, the old Greek democracy, it took 6,000 people in Athens to show up for any kind of legislation. 6,001 people had to show up for any kind of legislation to pass. It was, you know, large, the people, right? The polis. A lot of people it took. And so what Madison said is we're not a democracy. We are a republic. A republic is where you have a representative government. We're going to elect those representatives using a democratic process, majority rules, but they will then make the decisions rather than the people themselves. And so he, James Madison, created that distinction between the two words in order to sell the Constitution. And republic was a word that was very popular back then. And mob rule was something that people didn't like at all. And so Madison was able to say that basically the old Articles of Confederation were some kind of democracy mob rule stuff, at least at the state level, and we're going to go to a new kind of government that'll work much better. It's called a republic. And that's why when Jefferson started the Anti-Federalist Political Party and they actually gave it a name, they called it the Democratic Republican Party. That was the original name of what we call today the Democratic Party. It was founded by Thomas Jefferson. Democracy was not a dirty word then. It was just that, you know, republic was the higher word. And so everybody talked about republican principles and we're a republic and all this kind of stuff. Within 5 years of James Madison leaving the White House, he was president from, 1808 to, 8 years later. What would that be, 1816? Add 1 year, 1817, 1809 to 1817. Within 5 years of leaving the White House, Madison had come out and basically said, sure, we're a democracy and we're a republic. I just was using that language to sell the Constitution. And so starting in the early 19th century, in the early 1800s, we started using the word democracy again and using it interchangeably, to the point that, you know, Abe Lincoln was using it. A lot of people used it over the years.
Right.
And it became very common usage until the 1950s. Or 60s. And at that point, during the McCarthy era, some genius in the Republican Party figured out that Republican sounds like Republic and Democratic sounds like Democrat, sounds like democracy. And we want to strip from the Democratic Party the good vibes, the good feelings that people get when they say, I'm a Democrat because this is a democracy. And so they started this sales pitch that has been picked up to this day by right-wing radio and right-wing sales folks, you know, the hustlers, the shills, saying, no, we're not a democracy, we are a republic. And then the corollary to that is, therefore, the Democratic Party doesn't represent America in its genuine form. The Republican Party does, because we're a republic and not a democracy. That's their argument, or that's kind of their subliminal argument. And it's James Madison used it as a sales pitch. Now the Republicans are using it as a sales pitch. But really, democracy and republic, unless you want to get real technical and say, okay, a true democracy requires all the people to show up and express their, you know, a true democratic process would be like a ballot initiative, right, where the people are voting on something. That's,
exactly.
Small d democracy. Republic, arguably, using Madison's original language. But the words are largely interchangeable. And anybody who gets all exercised about this and says, oh, no, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. They're just repeating Joe McCarthy's sales pitch.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just an argument I constantly run into with a lot of my libertarian friends is, well, we're not a democracy. It doesn't say democracy. We're a constitutional republic. You know, the president's breaking the law because, he's going against a lot of the Constitution.
Yeah, it's nonsense. If you want the actual definition of what the United States is, and I think this goes back to Charles and Mary Beard, is that we are a constitutionally limited, representative, democratic republic. We're constitutionally limited. The Constitution limits the powers of government. representative. We run our government through elected representatives. Democratic, we elect them by majority rule, by democratic process. Republic, you know, a nation of laws. So that's, you know, if somebody says that, we're sort of a democracy, sort of a republic. But here's, if you want to get tactical, here's what we are. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. And my apologies to everybody else who wanted to get in. We will get back to this stuff tomorrow and everything else that's going on. Have a great day. And don't forget, democracy or a republic is not a spectator sport. You got to participate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.